Welcome to another edition of Radioactive Magazine with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. Today we will be exploring concepts related to the universe and life on this planet as part of a vast creative process, how these ideas provide the basis for a broad vision to embrace constructive action in addressing our planetary ecocide, the well-meaning but severely lacking response of the overall environmental movement, and discussion on what is required for humanity to truly move forward on a path leading toward a harmonious relation with our living Earth. To examine these subjects, we have with us today Dr. Lisa Da Silva, who is a wisdom teacher and eco-philosopher. Dr. Da Silva has a PhD in philosophy and religion with a concentration in the study of cosmology, consciousness, and ecology. She is a professor of history, ethics, and eco-philosophy, and is currently teaching at the University of San Francisco. Dr. Da Silva was a doctoral student of Dr. Brian Swim, who wrote The Universe Story, and is now a teaching colleague of Dr. Brian Swim. She is currently working on two book manuscripts, the first on love and ecology, and the second on Jesus as ecologist. In conversation with Dr. Da Silva, she has obvious passion and depth of knowledge on how humanity has come to the precipice of planetary ecocide, as well as an intimate understanding of fundamental steps forward. Dr. Da Silva, we deeply appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today and welcome you to Radioactive Magazine.
Thank you very much, Dave. I'm glad to be with you.
Okay. I'm glad that you're here with us today. For our first question, I'm just going to jump right into it here. In his video series, Canticle to the Cosmos, from Center for the Story of the Universe, Professor Brian Swim talks about the universe as biospiritual, with consciousness as a dimension of the original fireball from the Big Bang. Professor Swim refers to our Earth as a self-organizing, intelligent planet. And in his book, The Universe Story, he refers to the Earth as a highly differentiated unity, as is every organic reality. In the 4 billion year history of life on Earth, he refers to the development of human consciousness with our self-awareness as inherent in the structure of the universe. He also states human consciousness is the first eye of the Earth. As an eco-philosopher, can you expand on these and related themes while providing your view of the universe as well as life on Earth as part of a developmental process?
Yes, Dave. Wow, that's a great question. And a great introduction. I think what I'd say at first is that, you know, in a nutshell, for your listeners, the things that we're talking about here are the really big questions, aren't they? Like about how did we get here, and how do we understand it all, and how we understand our world is actually what cosmology means. That's what it's about. And over history, there have been many, many ways of looking at this and answering these questions. Now, through our science, in terms of where we are today, and certainly through the new cosmology, which we might call science in its wisdom phase, what we know most certainly is that there is an almost unimaginable intelligence that has brought us to life and that's permeating the cosmos. I mean, it's an unimaginable intelligence. That's at least 13.7 billion years old, and certainly in terms of our planet, we touch in at an age of about 4.6 billion years old. Now, how do we know that intelligence permeates the cosmos? Well, we know that life learns, and we know that it cooperates, and we know that it self-organizes the way that Dr. Swim talks about. And we know about this cooperation and through things we call coevolutionary patterns. That's a wonderful term. And you see that, for example, between flowers and insects and what they do to get on together. And we see that even more poetically through the relationship between our breath and the trees. So there's these beautiful self-organizing processes that are co-evolutionary going on. That means, you know, survival of one means the survival of the other. And we're a part of that gorgeous intelligence. And I think in what you were just saying there, and in terms of what Brian is saying, is that the possibility of consciousness and indeed of self-consciousness has always been present in the universe. And I think that's what he's saying. He's saying that that possibility for consciousness, for self-consciousness, has always been latent and always been there.
Right, and with the development of human consciousness was, with the development of the human species, that manifested what was inherent, correct?
Yes, exactly, exactly. That we reflect it, we express it, you know. And when I think of this intelligence, you know, this gorgeous intelligence moving through the cosmos, you know, many, as you know, we call God, you know, or words, different words that mean God or the divine one.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of that intelligence, I think of a life force that can't help itself. You know, this life force that has momentum. I almost want to call it irresistibility, that can't help but become. It's almost like an urge to life, an urge to create, to try, to express itself. And there's a playfulness in it and a power, an exuberance almost. And it comprises a journey, that journey of coming to life on Earth, comprises a journey of over 13 billion years. But I think the key point that I want to make here is that it's those immensities that we belong to. It's that irresistible force that is our living lineage, that urge to life, that passion. And that's what we belong to. And that deserves a little pause.
Right.
You know?
Well, and all life on Earth belongs to that process, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But as what Brian might call its latest extravagance, meaning us, it's what we belong to. Which means, Dave, that we belong. We belong. You know, we have a place here. We belong. We belong to it. It comprises us. We are coextensive with it. We're not tourists here. We are the Earth. We're made by her, which also means that we're made by these immensities. You know, so the powers that built galaxies literally permeate them. You know, sometimes my students, my undergrad students, have difficulty in accepting this, but it's actually really true. That we're related to stars. You know, in fact, we're related elementally to every living thing that's ever lived and that will ever live. You know, so it's almost like, well, it isn't almost like, we have eternity inside us. You know, our nervous systems are rich in the fires of the first fire that created the stars. You know, there is water in our bodies that contain nuclei of the primordial hydrogen that birthed billions of years ago. I mean, so it's really worth pausing on who we are and what we're made of and the web of kinship that we belong to. You know, and as ever, you know, for me anyway, it's the poets that get it right. You know, one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver, talks about one long muscle. And in terms of our profoundly intimate journey, I think that that's what we belong to. Now, when we stick with that, you know, the meaning for that and the meaning making of that comes into being when we ask about, well, if that's who we are and what we belong to, how do we inhabit those immensities? How do we get a handle on the awe of our existence in our day-to-day lives? How do we reflect that? How do we celebrate it? Is there a responsibility and an indebtedness that we might have in that? You know, and if we're made of irresistibility and splendor, how do we shine that back You know, is our destiny going to be that we cripple and destroy it, that we ignore and keep it? Or do we devote ourselves to the sacred play of it and enter the sacred power of it in ways that might affirm it and in ways that might extend it and ways that we might co-create from it? And I think that the question becomes, you know, so as individuals, as families, as communities, as nations, how are we going to participate in this story of gorgeous immensity? You know, what kind of cultural fruits are we going to create? Might we create politics of wonder? You know, how are we going to mirror it? And that's where it becomes very, very important for me. You know, it's important in the terms of the belonging, and it's important in terms of what the belonging actually means for us.
You're listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI, and we are talking with Dr. Lisa Da Silva of the University of San Francisco, who is an eco-philosopher. You know, the thing of it, though, is that, you know, humanity has begun the sixth mass extinction of species, and we are on the verge of committing ecocide on the planet. And I know in our conversation that you said that there are 2,500 to 3,500 years of human development leading up to the current time. And, you know, so, you know, so the trick is to access the positive depths within us in order to reverse this historical process. This destructive historical process. You talked about that we're living a patriarchal capitalist religion.
In answer to your question, that's a big question. So there's elements and parts of it that I'd just like to address. You know, I do feel that our destiny now, if we have a destiny, a living destiny at all, is going to be about remembering what we belong to, remembering the immensities of what we belong to. We might talk of it as entering the psychic depths of the universe, you know. I do genuinely believe that, certainly in view of the ecocide you've mentioned. And when we talk about ecocide, it's important to remember to explain what terms like that mean, because not everyone knows that, you know. And ecology, in its etymology, Dave, is actually about home. That's what it's referring to. So when we talk about ecocide, we're talking about the death or the murder of our home. And you're absolutely right when we talk about the fact that we're on the cusp, well, we're in the sixth mass extinction. And I believe the latest figures I was reading last week, I think we're losing upwards of 50,000 species a year. And whether we like to accept it or not, this is a man-made catastrophe. We've changed the climate, and our systems are dying. The systems that have taken billions of years to equalize, to become to proportionality with each other, those things are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And the destruction, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't just go back to the Industrial Revolution, for example, which is what, you know, a lot of scientists and historians are talking about in terms of what our ecocidal pattern right now. I mean, almost certainly the Industrial Revolution and what's happened with us starting to, you know, chuck billions of tons of carbon into the air. In terms of climate change, the Industrial Revolution is very, very important as a beginning point for us. However, when you're talking about ecosystems that are collapsing, in my view, the roots for this go much deeper than the last couple of hundred years. And I believe that there is a deep underlying consciousness or reality that we can map if we, say, look at thinking through Western thought. And in my work, that's part of what I have done. What I've done is I've kind of created a map that goes as far back as about 2,500 years. just in exploring Western thought, in terms of where what I'm calling a life-hating ideology or life-hating behaviors, where they might come from. And when we look at Western thought, we identify the emergence of these things we might call up-and-out cosmologies. And by that, I'm talking about a way of being which kind of is defined by the fact that we're oriented to somewhere above the earth, most notably in the heavens, and it almost signifies that we don't want to be here. And that's certainly been expressed as far back as Plato's writings. And then we've seen that view permeate through the four major patriarchal traditions, and through Christianity especially, and then through the Enlightenment. And what we see time and again as we look at the history of thought and history of patterns of beliefs and behaviors is that this thing that I'm calling light age has permeated all sorts of endeavors. Now, I'm not saying it's the only thing that existed. What I'm saying is that it's dominated. And it shows up in particular in the way that we think about matter. And we can think about matter as the stuff of life itself that was in the intelligence of the cosmos. So in the way that we've thought about matter, in the way that we've thought about bodies, human bodies, the body of the earth, in the ways that we've thought about death, in the ways that we've thought about women, what we see are patterns of belief and behaviors that denote a kind of life hate. And they've influenced the way that we thought about our planet and still think about our planet and each other. And I believe there's a direct correlation between this long lineage of life hate and the exploitation, domination, and predatory relationship that we have with our planet. And so when we look at that lineage, which has dominated, it's not the only lineage for sure, it's not the only thing that we've achieved as a species, but when we look at that lineage and that consciousness, we know that it belongs to us all. And consequently, our ecocidal moment belongs to us all.
You said, I missed the phrase, you said the moment belongs to...
It belongs to us all, Dave. You
know, oh, okay.
When we talk about an underlying reality of consciousness, we've ingested it, and our parents have ingested it.
Right.
You know, we've eaten it. We've made love to it. It lives inside of us.
Uh-huh.
The attitude that I'm talking about in terms of attitudes to life itself, to matter, it lives inside of us.
Right.
It's become our underlying reality.
Right. You're listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI, and we are talking with Dr. Lisa Da Silva of the University of San Francisco, who is an eco-philosopher. Yeah, I remember you talking about how the ecocide that's happening belongs to us all, and you also talked. You said the ecocide that our ecocide belongs to us all.
Yeah.
And that that it's very important that we be able to take a look at what we're doing and also to forgive ourselves.
Wow.
And
yeah.
And to me, that was a very key piece.
Yes. You know. Thank you. You know. It's funny, you know, my undergraduate students will often laugh at me because I repeat this over and over, you know, and just from a practical perspective, in order to know where we are, we need to know how we got here. And in order to know how we got here, we need to know where we've come from. So we need to become very, very intimate with the injury. We need to become intimate with the wound of ecocide. And how we do that is that we face who we've been to our planet and what we've done. And my belief certainly is that there's an ethical requirement in this, because to not face what we've done, to not cop to it, is to kind of add insult to injury, really. But as well as that, there's a very practical reason why we need to face it, because I think in facing it, in coming to face who we are and who we've been, which is going to take a lot of courage, let's be honest, and a lot of compassion and a lot of wisdom I think it's only in facing what we've done that we can figure out what to do. But also, you know, there's a necessary forgiveness that needs to happen here so that we can face it, come to terms, forgive ourselves, and then in that spaciousness of the forgiving and the letting go, there's space to create anew, to come up with solutions, to come up with things that are dynamic and sustainable and are actually going to work.
Right, and and that leads directly to another point, which is that there needs to be a development of a new mystique, which counters the current commercial industrial mystique, as Professor Swim referred to it in his book, I think, The Universal Story. Mm. And he also talked about how consciousness, how evolution responds to consciousness and behavior. And given those two observations, what are your reactions to those?
Yeah, you see, in terms of the new mystique, I don't know, I don't know necessarily whether I would use that language. What I can say is that, okay, we've been serving what one might call trivialized cosmology. A trivialized cosmology, meaning that, we've been told that we need to, earn money to become successful. We're living in a capitalist system that is relentlessly driven by this thing called profit and more and more and more. And within inside of that, we participate in that, and there are, success levels within that. Now, when we look at that in terms of what success is and what makes us happy, I call that trivialized, because when we then step outside of ourselves a bit and then look at cosmologically what we really belong to, the immensities of what we belong to and actually what brought us to life, and none of us are outside of that. We all belong to it. Mm-hmm. We all belong to these immensities, the miraculous coming to life. We
right.
belong to that journey.
Right.
When we realize that, and that in itself can give us a sense of peace and belonging and delight, surely, then it puts, earning lots of money so we can buy things and then be happy in a whole new category of trivialization,
right.
as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And so that's what I would say in response to what Brian was saying about this industrial mystique. And I believe that the heart of this, is in remembering who we are. And when we remember who we are and what we've come from, what does that require of us? Is anything required of us? And is what we're doing right now, in terms of our ecocidal tendencies, the response that we want to be our legacy? And when I reflect on that, and certainly in my work, I mean, if I'm talking about life hate, the other thing that I'm talking about, which I believe is will be part of the restoration, is a thing that I'm calling, life love, and wildlife love in particular, which perhaps might be the new consciousness that we need on the ascendant. It might be what we might need to certainly undergird all of our environmental endeavors. And, these things are difficult because, as you well know, as many of us well know, we might not turn this thing around. Ecocide, we're on a precipice. We've changed the climate. We're losing species in the tens of thousands every year. Our topsoil is being eroded. We know that the state of our oceans is cataclysmic. And our human population is voraciously increasing. So there's a real possibility that we might not turn this around.
Mm-hmm. But
and when I talk about wild love, and I talk about it at an individual level, a communal level, a policy level, a national level, one of the things that makes it wild is not just about being conscious about loving matter and about loving bodies. But one of the things that makes it wild is that we need to do it now, whether we think it's going to change things or not. And that's the element that lends itself to what I would call wildness.
And I as I understand it, part of that wildness would be tapping into the inherent creativity that's inherent in the universe through our human consciousness, and that it's there to be tapped for creativity.
Well, indeed. And the processes we go through, you know, so this radical non-denial that I talk about in placing ourselves is going to be a part of that, so that we can access the spaciousness in which we can come into new co-creativity together. So that intimacy with the problem is going to be very, very important for us, as is, you know, the forgiveness.
Right.
And, you know, the question then becomes, you know, how do we put our wild love for life in action? Because our environmental endeavors right now are very, very important. You know, cleaning up rivers and the ocean and all of these things are very, very important.
Right.
And at the same time, I think what we're in need of at the moment is a kind of a unifying vision.
Right.
That brings us all together, that lets us know why we're doing what we're doing. And I'm not sure that fearfulness, sure, I understand fearfulness around it all, is where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we haven't done as a global community is stand in awe of how we've gotten to be here.
Right.
Remember who we are and love it. Love it wildly. And create policy and politics around that wonder.
Right. Well,
you know, that's what I'm interested in.
Right. Well, Dr. De Silva, we have run out of time. I'm very, very sorry that we have to cut it off. But thank you very much for all this discussion. And we definitely could have stood to go on quite a bit longer about this. But again, thank you so much for being on Radioactive Magazine this week.
Dave, thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Okay, thank you.